Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Bridge the Atlantic. We are your hosts, music web designer Ross Barber, owner of Electric Kiwi, where we create awesome custom websites for bands, artists, and musicians.
And I'm award-winning singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and indie filmmaker, Marissa Novelli, founder of the electronic rock band Midnight Soundtrack.
This week, we are joined by Los Angeles-based celebrity brand strategist Phil Pellin. Phil builds brands for TV personalities, experts, and entrepreneurs. You've seen his clients on Shark Tank, Dancing with the Stars, American Idol, The X Factor, Project Runway, The Doctors, and more. He's been featured on Access Hollywood as a celebrity brand expert and was recently named one of the most influential educators in digital marketing for 2015 by the Online Marketing Institute.
In 2014, Phil released his first book, Shut Up and Tweet, which contains game-changing strategies that will turn you into a Twitter rock star. Phil's expertise has earned him speaking engagements worldwide, including events such as New Media Europe in Manchester, England, and Arctic 15 in Helsinki, Finland. We're excited to learn more about Phil and the advice he'd offer to musicians and other creatives. So let's just jump right into it and say, hey, Phil, how's it going?
Hey.
Hey, I'm going to bring the two of you with me everywhere I need to go for an intro because that was good.
Does it make you feel pumped and ready to do this interview or what?
It does. Yes, I'm so happy to join both of you. It's going to be good. We're going to get into some good stuff.
Well, let's start off by having you tell us three things about yourself that everyone should know.
Three things that everyone should know. I am Canadian. I like to let people know. Grew up in Canada. I moved to the States. For grad school and just ended up staying. That's one thing. Another thing that people should know is that I am honest. That makes me good at my job, I think. I always like to be honest with my clients and my friends, but not rude, but honest. There's a difference.
Assertive,
yes, right? What else? One thing that people should know about me is that I love to travel. I love to travel. This has been a really fun year because, as you mentioned, I've done a lot of conferences, keynoting and speaking at conferences. I've been to Europe twice. I saw you, Ross Barber, when I was in Scotland for a quick day trip, and been to Asia, going back at the end of this month. So two trips to Asia, two trips to Europe, and I'm loving life. I love what I do. I love my job. That's thing number four.
And we love your energy, and that's why you're on this show, man. We love it. So yeah, positive and just so uplifting, and you love what you're doing, and we can feel that because we love what we do too. And speaking of honest, Ross was telling me that you're incredibly honest, so honest that it comes down to a parent's offspring. Ross, do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, so Phil, in your Twitter bio, you say, if your baby is ugly, it's my job to tell you. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I do say that. That's been my Twitter bio now. Used to change it all the time, but that's been my Twitter bio now for at least over a year or two.
Phil, tell me, are my kids ugly?
And see, this is what people do. Your kids are definitely not ugly.
Okay, thank you.
This is what people do. I know. Sigh of relief.
Thank you.
I get pictures almost daily of people's children. And that's not something I'm asking for, by the way, just to be clear, but it happens. I mean, what's great is I use my Twitter bio in a way that I want everyone else to, which is to start conversations. So your Twitter bio, tell me who you are and why anyone should care, but then also give me some indication of your personality, because online, I don't have the luxury of being face-to-face. I mean, this is as face-to-face as we're going to get. What people don't know listening is that we've spent half an hour trying to get to this point, right? With technical,
Never happens.
Never.
No way.
God, no. What am I talking about? I must be thinking about a different day. Yeah. So no, but I mean, we don't have the luxury of sitting face to face. And so online, we have to overcompensate a little bit. So I've, you know, I add a little edge, a little punch, because that's me in person. And you overcompensate a little bit online. So the second sentence of my bio is, if your baby's ugly, it's my job to tell you, which means if you have a bad idea, I'll break it to you based on research and based on what I think is going to work for your brand. I follow, you know, research. An idea is great, but an idea paired with research is always better. And then I follow my intuition. I've never been wrong. You know, I've done a lot of really cool project works, worked with a lot of really interesting people. So that's what I do as a brand strategist, more or less. Well, that's how I say it in one sentence.
I'll tell you, when I read that, I think that's the only Twitter bio that's ever actually made me laugh out loud. So I mean, and it immediately showed me that you've got a sense of humor, but it tells me what you're saying without saying, I am a strategist and I blah, 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 boring. Next person, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
So Charlie Sheen, you interned for him.
Almost. I should
correct myself. You auditioned to intern for Charlie Sheen.
Correct.
This is what happens when I scan my notes rather than read the notes.
No. No, a lot of people thought that I actually did the internship, but jumped on. I'll tell this story really quick. Almost 5 years ago, I grew up in Canada. I did my undergrad at Western, moved to Florida for a year, went to Full Sail University, did my master's in entertainment business. Within 2 months of wrapping up at Full Sail, I entered with 90,000 people to be Charlie Sheen's social media intern.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I made it to the top 50 in this contest. Thank God for Canada, let me just say, because in this campaign to become Charlie Sheen's social media intern at the peak of his craziness in the media, Canada loved the story. And as you may know, in Canada, there's a law, 30% of all content must be Canadian. And I think what they did was they talked about Charlie Sheen, and then they used me because I built this buzzworthy internship competition at the age of 22. I had a website, Tiger Blood Phil. I had this whole campaign. I was contacting Canadian press, which meant four waves of coverage. I did over 100 TV, radio, print interviews. In fact, at some point, I'll go and show you the article that I have over here somewhere on my shelf. That is, I have it laminated because it was the best and worst thing. It said, sorry, Sheen, I think, hello, Seacrest. And so the Toronto Star decided that I dropped out of the competition, basically, that I took this internship with Ryan Seacrest. And then Ryan Seacrest, the VP, called me and said, what are you doing? Why are we, you haven't even started interning for us? Because that was the whole thing was, you know, I got this opportunity with Ryan Seacrest. And I was like, yes, that's what I actually want. I don't want to work for Charlie Sheen. I want to work for Ryan Seacrest. That's my dream. And so VP calls me at Ryan Seacrest Productions. He says, are you sitting down? And I'm like, no, but I will. Like, what's going on? He says, Ryan's not happy. Here I thought I was getting a call to congratulate me on all the press coverage and all the buzz that I had stirred up for him for free. Okay.
Okay.
And so then he says, Ryan's not happy. We can't take you on as an intern. Meanwhile, I'd never been to California in my entire life, was set to move, lived right around the corner from E. I didn't have a car. I don't drive. I'm like, it's perfect setup. 2 weeks before, I'm set to move out to California. I get the internship pulled away from me, basically, and I wasn't allowed to talk about it. So all summer, you know, oh, Phil moved to LA. He's working for Ryan Seacrest, this, you know, Canadian, you know, small town boy, whatever. Couldn't talk about it other than to like close friends and stuff. I was like, it didn't happen. So that was how my career started. I moved to LA. I didn't know a single person. I had no job, no internship lined up, nothing. I moved here.
So your
here
career started by not interning for Charlie Sheen or Ryan Seacrest. I just want to point that out.
Yes.
And it's worked out very well for you.
It has.
I mean that. That's not sarcastic.
No, it has. I mean, I have the greatest job in the entire world. I could hop on an airplane tomorrow and go wherever I feel like it and continue working, and my clients don't care. It's one thing to have success in whatever that means to you. It could be money. It could be freedom. For me, it's freedom more than anything else. The ability to do whatever I want. I can sit here in pajamas if I so feel like it. And I get to do that because that's what I want to do. I'm my own boss. I'm an entrepreneur by mistake. Really, truly. I mean, had it not been for what had happened to me, the reassurance through media that, oh, Phil, like, you can do this, you know, like you can do social media and you can build brands. You've done it for yourself. Now I've got something tangible to say to others. Here's what I can help you with. And that's how it's all started for me.
Speaking of building brands, you might realize that I'm wearing a shirt with my own name on it because
I did notice.
This is part of my building a brand, having myself on my own t-shirt with my name.
Yes, I think that's brilliant.
Well, there we go. It's brilliant. I like that.
So, Phil, you've built personal brands for many celebrities and entrepreneurs, including one of our past guests, Judy Stakey, who's awesome and has so many good things to say about you.
I love her.
Love her, too. She's great. Can you maybe tell us a couple of your career highlights and maybe if there's been sort of one specific big turning point in your career?
Yes. I've worked with, I would say working with my first celebrity client was really exciting. To have someone really fancy and important hire you, and I've worked with a few now. I wish I could name them all, but I'm really technically not allowed to, so I better not. But I mean, you named some of the shows I've worked on. I've worked with clients on Shark Tank, Sharks and Entrepreneurs. I've worked with, you know, all the American Idol, Dancing with the Stars, So You Think You Can Dance. I mean, on a lot of the networks in the U.S. But to have someone like that, you know, hire you and be like, I have confidence in what you can do. What I've learned a lot by working with people like that is that it's not so much about the deliverable. It's about the trust. That's a relationship that's based on trust. When someone is a public figure, there's a lot of people trying to get in and get attention and get something out of it. When someone like that comes to you and says, I trust you to handle this for me, it's that. I would say that was definitely a career highlight. Flying to Japan this year to deliver a keynote at iMedia Summit in Miyazaki was also a highlight because I stood on stage in front of 300 senior marketers, Japanese. A few of them spoke English, but not many of them. And I literally delivered a keynote talk that was translated word for word so that they understood. So this was crazy. I'm standing on stage. First of all, let's not forget about this part, the introduction, which was like reading it off. And then all the lights went off and this music played and I walked out on a runway. Okay, not a model, just a brand strategist, but still it was this huge spectacle. So I stand there right on my mark. Okay, and I'm looking around, such a quiet audience. I'm used to America where everyone's hooting and hollering and talking while I'm trying to speak. Oh my God, I'm standing there. It's so quiet. Not once in 45 minutes did someone lean over to the person beside them and whisper, not once, because I would have seen it. It was so quiet that I could hear, and I'm standing there thinking, I'm speaking to you, but very few of you can actually even understand exactly what I'm saying. So there's translators at the back in their special little box, and everyone's wearing earpieces like it's the UN. And it was just a fun experiment for me, like to not only deliver a talk that's useful because I'm a keynote and they've flown me there, but also to like think about what I'm saying because every second of it is being translated into their earpieces. It was so quiet that I heard this buzz through the room and I could hear the translators collectively through the earpieces translating what I was saying. That was another highlight. Those were two like big ones, I would say, as I look back. But just creating all of this. Third one would be just creating all of this by the age. I've turned 27 in December, so I am proud of what I've done, but I love what I do, and what I do is an extension of my passion. So it's a business, and I do this to make money, but I do it because I love it, so it doesn't feel like work. If everyone can find themselves in a job that feels that way, I mean, that's what everyone wants and everyone should have in an ideal world.
That's the dream right there.
Definitely.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit about your book, Shut Up and Tweet.
Sure. So,
Look at that. Someone told me that.
There we Someone's go. We got a fan.
Someone loves it.
Yes, we're bridging the Atlantic with Shut Up and Tweet right now. Nice. Is what's happening. I have some over here on my shelf. I wrote a book because I spoke at the California Women's Conference last year, and the CEO challenged me to write a book 2 months before the conference itself. She's like, Phil, you don't have a product? You don't have anything to sell? Write a book. I was like, write a book? I don't even read. I have the shortest attention span on the face of the planet. How on earth am I going to write a book? Wrote a book. And so I wrote it as a short, little, quick, to the point, punchy book that would be useful for people. No one wants to read a book about Twitter, so I kept it short and to the point and useful. And so I believe that Twitter is still the only social media platform where you have control over its growth and you can access a targeted audience for free. I mean, you know how rapidly social media and internet marketing changes. To be able to still say that even a year and a half later is pretty amazing. I think it's the most useful social media platform for lean budgets. I don't get a lot of people that come to me working with personal brands and say, Phil, I have all this money I want to spend on advertising. That doesn't happen. So I'm always looking, how can we leverage and, you know, how can we use social media in a unconventional way to help you reach your goal? And I think Twitter is that platform, not Facebook, not, you know, many others. So that was kind of my motivation and inspiration to write the book was, you know, look, I taught classes here in LA for a few years. And I said to a few of my students, what's the most useful thing you've ever learned from me? And they said, your Twitter strategy, it's helped me grow thousands of followers, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, perfect, I'll write a book. That's really, anyone wanting to write a book out there, and there's a lot of people who do, that's my recommendation. One, ask people who know you what the most important thing is that they've ever learned from you. Two, make a list of all the questions you get frequently, 40 to 50 questions, write answers to them. You will not believe how easy it is to take the questions out, reformat, you've got a book. Done.
Well, this is very interesting that you're talking about this because yes. Ross right here is currently writing his first book.
He sure is.
Which is really exciting. Which is, if you don't mind me saying, Ross, I believe it's to sum it up. The book is about how to engage with your audience and actually not just be a separate entity for musicians, not to be a separate entity from your audience. But Ross can explain a little bit better.
Yeah, so basically, I'm big on relationships within the music industry. I feel that music is a relationship business, whether it's relationships that you have with other musicians or your fans or other people in the industry. So I'm kind of wanting to write a book about how you can grow and nurture these relationships to get to a point where you can be very more open and transparent with your audience in the hope that, you know, by being more open and transparent that you can gain more support. Because that's something that I get asked a lot and a lot of people talk to me about is that they feel that they don't have the support from their fans, but the fans at the same time don't know how they can support.
Yeah, they want to support the artists their favorite artists. They just don't know. They just don't know, you know. But yeah, so that's exciting.
Yeah, so now I need to just write down the 40 to 50 questions.
You take those notes and you apply it, man.
That's all you do. I mean, that's really interesting insight is you know what you're writing the book on based on what people ask you about and based on a need. You mentioned like, you know, wow, people will say to me, it's crazy what you've done by the age of 27, what you've grown. And I've been at this for 4 years now. You want to know why? Is because, and this is, I'm so passionate about this when I'm working with clients, when I'm teaching seminars, conferences, it's not about you. Something that you do for yourself is a hobby. If you get enjoyment out of and you get pleasure from doing something, that's called a hobby. But until it satisfies someone else's need, it's not a brand or a business. And I feel the word brand and business are interchangeable. Branding is business. It's not this. We're not just making things look pretty and shipping you off and saying, here you go. Here's your new logo. Like, who cares? If you don't have a business, you don't have a brand, you don't have something that people need, you're not going to get what you want. You know, if you're looking to have, you know, turn what something you love into your job, into your livelihood, then it needs to not be something just for you. It needs to be something others need. So I'm saying this because I think, Ross, you've done a really good job of identifying what it is people need from you and now turning that into a scalable entity that allows you to sell a book that's going to be useful for people. So we don't care what people want. We care what people need. People don't spend money freely on wants. Okay. But they do spend money on needs. And even if it's something silly, it could be a purse, it could be a watch, it could be something, it could be a guitar, it could be something that you probably don't need, but in your head, you know, it's something you need. That's what people spend money on. And so I think you've done a good job of not just writing a book on what you want to write it on, You want to write a book on what others are going to find useful, and that's going to make it easier to promote it.
But just like yourself, Phil, like it is, I believe with Ross, it's coming from a place of passion at the same time. You know what I mean? Ross, I don't think you could sit down and start writing a book if it weren't something that you believe in, something with the goal of helping other people, which it seems like what you're doing as well, Phil. You want to help other people, but at the same time, you're smart about it, and you have a lot of fucking fun doing it.
Totally. Right?
So speaking of fun, you ready for 20 questions?
Let's do it.
All right. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Meat or veggies?
Always veggies.
Good for you. TV or Netflix?
TV.
We don't even need to ask this question, but yeah. Twitter or Facebook?
Twitter!
Twitter or Twitter? Yoga or yogurt?
Yogurt.
Friends or Seinfeld?
Neither. I don't like either of them. I hate both of them with a bloody burning passion. I know.
We'll move on. East Coast or West Coast?
West Coast.
Vampires or zombies?
Zombies.
Mac or PC?
Mac.
Canada or Scotland?
Canada.
Finally. Actually, no. Canada gets a lot of this. Taylor Swift or Taylor Lautner?
Taylor Lautner? Are you kidding me? Hello?
Education or experience?
Experience.
I like that. I'm with you on that. Family Guy or American Dad?
Family Guy.
Style or substance?
Oh, that's the hardest one you've asked me so far.
I knew that would be.
Substance.
Nice. Because, you know, does that not last longer?
Mm-hmm. It does. And exactly. You can't have style without substance.
Michael Jackson or Michael Bolton?
Michael Jackson.
But it was close, right?
It was a close call. You almost went for the power grab.
Celine Dion or Marilyn Manson?
Oh, are you kidding me? You're speaking to the guy who was in the second row of the Celine Dion concert less than a month ago in Vegas?
No way.
Celine Dion. Uh-huh.
Is she still sounding as great as she used to?
It was, you could... Even if you hated Celine Dion, there's no way you wouldn't enjoy her Vegas concert. Just saying.
I can't deny her voice. I don't listen to her, but I can't deny that amazing voice. Can't deny
it. She's funny. She's so quirky and weird. I love her. Yeah, nice. She's like, she's just a walking meme. I love her.
Ricky Gervais or Ricky Martin?
Ricky Martin, for obvious reasons.
Whale or kale?
Whale, like as in the animal?
Yes.
Yep.
Whale.
Bette Midler or the Riddler?
Bette Midler.
And finally, drum roll.
Ross or Marcio?
Oh, that's tough. I like the combination of both of you.
Yeah?
Is that answer too safe?
It is safe. But
for you, yeah. For you, it's
90%
safe.
Of people have said that, so...
I want you to be bold. I want you
Yeah, you're someone that I was expecting just a definitive answer and just like, this is what I think, you know?
No, because here's why I can't give... Well, if I could give you a definitive answer, you'd know you'd get one. At least you know that.
That's true.
I mean, I know I've known Ross... a lot longer, and I've been to Scotland to visit him, but you're from Canada, so there's a little bit of an inherent bond there.
That is true. Yeah. Well, I will take this. Yeah. Is it a Rossio or Moss?
Rossio.
Rossio Moss.
You're newer. So Ross goes first because I've known him longer. Rossio. Right.
That's cool.
That's my final answer.
Let's take that.
Well, that was fun. We want to help out the musicians and or any creatives watching or listening to this show right now. And we'd really like to know if you have three of the most important things that an artist should do to brand themselves, I guess particularly on social media.
Yes. I'm going to give you an answer in under a minute. I'm going to tell you three things in under a minute. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
Okay. For all creatives, step number one, position your brand. We talked a little bit about this. Something you love with something others need. That is the formula for positioning your brand. Once it's positioned, build your brand, which is just having something to show for it. Your brand identity, your website, your social media profiles, and your photography is the one area that most people forget. But in fact, I believe it's the most important. If you're looking to differentiate yourself in a very competitive creative market, photography. Once you've positioned your brand, once you've built it, then you get to cross the bridge to promote it. right? You get to actually like put it out there in a way that's going to make most sense. You have to isolate, you know, identify where your audience is, use social media, use online marketing, do what other people aren't doing and take a risk. And that's how you'll get noticed among the mediocrity out there. There's a lot of mediocre. Do something that's memorable. Stand out. Rise above the noise. That's my advice on three things in under a minute.
Could you elaborate just a little bit on the position, the first step? What does that truly mean to an artist? How do they position themselves?
That's my universal formula for every single market, but I like that. Let's talk specifically about how it applies to musicians.
Sure.
Because it really is, I would say more so than usual, it's not business really, but there is a business element to it, as you would have learned from Judy Stanky. I think the balance between something you're passionate about and something you're good at and something others want. It's really interesting because there's going to be a number of variables that determine what it is you do. But I would say everything you go to do, let it not just be something from a place of passion, but also be aware of what people are responding to. What are your most downloaded tracks? What songs are most tweeted, or what do people like? Or go to your fans and get feedback on what they like a business would launching a product. Know, be informed on what it is people are responding to well, and maybe what people are not responding to as well. And that really should be a consideration moving forward. If you want to take your career from hobby to business, you have to satisfy a need. Even musicians do.
Hear the musicians thinking, oh, but that's not authentic. But you know what? It can be authentic. And I'll tell you how.
Sure, it can.
As a musician myself. As a songwriter, you write all kinds of songs. I don't just write one type of song. I've written tons of songs that probably would have been fit on the same record. But when it comes out to putting out a record, yeah, you do have to kind of think, well, what do I want to share with people? And, you know, am I going to put this metal song on this pop rock record? Probably not. You know, and it you can still be authentic by, you know, you can still strike a balance. You can still put a couple of those songs on a record you really want people to hear. But you do be aware of, you know, what do your fans want to hear? You know what I mean? Don't write something for them, because then it's not going to be authentic. But is that making sense? You know, that's how I kind of look at it.
Balancing. It's balancing all of those elements. And one other thing that you touched on that I think is to think about your album or whatever it is you're creating as a collection, as a brand. Like, if it's what you're creating, all of these individual pieces work together as one to illustrate what you're about and why people should care.
Absolutely.
Even though it's not really visual, I mean, sure, you've got like literally visual elements. You've got cover art, you've got, you know, promotional images and, you know, website, all this kind of visual photography representation of what it is you're creating. But musically, you're building a brand with every album or every collection, whatever it is. I say album, I think it's still the most relevant, even though people are less likely to listen from start to finish, although that's still how I listen to music.
That's how I still listen to it, Ross. I believe there are more of us out there than you think.
I think so too. I would agree with you, but I think to keep in mind that you're building a brand and that you don't have to do everything all at once. So, and Ross, you'll find this when you're writing your book. I was like, I'm going to add a bunch of stuff about branding in my book about Twitter. No, keep it focused. Give it purpose. What motivates you to create this brand, knowing that down the line, you're going to have ideas and the ability to elaborate. You don't have to do it all at once. Have a focus, have an angle. Your opinion, your perspective is something to be considered with what it is you're creating.
You know, I have dichotomy in me here talking about this because, you know, my side, I believe in being completely genuine and authentic, which I am, and that's what I pride myself on. That's my brand, I guess, it's me being truthful and honest. But at the same time, you know, behind the scenes, you do look at what you have. Now, like I'm writing for my second record, and I've got, Ross, what, close to 30 songs. You know, now I'm sitting back thinking, okay, not only what are the best songs, but what songs do I want people to hear, and what goes together? And also, you know, especially since my as an artist, I use my name. What do I want people to hear as Marcio Novelli? You know? Yeah. You know, and that's gonna include a couple maybe weird songs that I want to show a side of my personality, but it's also gonna include, you know, some of my better songs and some of the more poppy songs, I guess, that will be heard, if that makes any sense. Does that make sense? It's completely authentic and genuine to me. It's just after the fact being smart about what you get out there. You're not gonna put out 30 songs in an album.
It's a balancing act. Yeah. And I think my advice comes from a place of making the assumption that an artist wants to do this for a living. And so to think that you can just create this stuff because you're so good and you're so talented and everyone's going to want it, that's naive. It just, I mean, maybe one in a million. That's just not how it works. So if you want to keep it as a hobby, play in your basement and you want to have an audience, fantastic. Otherwise, if you want to turn this into a career, yes, keep the authenticity, which is why people are drawn to you. They have a relationship with you. They want to learn. You know, I work more with TV hosts than I do with artists. And when I'm working with hosts, we say you want to have a friendship with your audience, even though they'll never meet you. Your delivery and your presentation and your art allows people to feel like they know you. And I think that's true for musicians. However, you need to be aware of what people want. You need to do market research. You need to know. And that's advice for people who want to do this as a career. Otherwise, you have to know what people want and what people are responding to. Otherwise, it stays a hobby, in my opinion.
Phil, you're awesome. I think everyone should definitely go to your website. That's philpallen.co, philpallen.co. And your Twitter and Instagram is philpallen.
Mm-hmm.
Consistent branding. We always talk about that on the show.
You just launched your podcast as well. No Filter, which is spelled No Phil, as in your name, Tur. We'll add the link to that in the show notes. People can search for it on iTunes. It's awesome.
Cool.
Loved your interview with Judy Stakey.
Thank you.
Looking forward to hearing more.
Perfect.
Yes.
And I'm currently writing for my next solo album. And I've just recently allowed my side project, Midnight Soundtracks, debut album Foreplay, to be downloaded for free in exchange for your email address, which is exciting on both ends. You can hear my music on marcinavelli.com. So make sure to follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Spotify, which are all /Marcianovelli.
I'm working on websites for various artists at the moment, and as I said earlier, I'm researching for my new book, which I'm very excited about, and I'm sure I'll be telling you all more about that soon. You can check out my work at electrickiwi.co.uk. You'll find me on Twitter and Instagram as Electric Kiwi, and on Facebook as Electric Kiwi Design.
This episode was brought to you by Chris Keaton Presents. Find out more about what Chris does and how he can help you at chriskeaton.com.
And if you'd like to sponsor the show, visit patreon.com/bridgetheatlantic.
Yes, and please do help sponsor the show. We do this for free to help spread love, creativity, and help not only share the amazing things that artists are doing out there, but also to help aspiring musicians, filmmakers, artists, creatives of all kind to help build themselves up. So we can only keep doing the show with the support of our patrons. So definitely go to patreon.com/bridgetheatlantic and you can sponsor us for as low as a dollar. This has been awesome, Phil. Yeah.
Thank you guys for having me. It's been fun.
Thanks for coming
along,
man.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Bridge the Atlantic. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave a rating and review on iTunes.
You can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So connect with us on there and let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for being awesome, and we'll see you next week.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.